Do you recall a day where everything clicked into place, where the world seemed to move in perfect harmony and every task flowed effortlessly? Introducing you to London Nootropics, adaptogenic coffee blends, thoughtfully crafted to elevate and balance your day, delivering all the perks of your beloved coffee, plus the incredible benefits of adaptogens, which also help to dial down those less than loved side effects like jitters, anxiety, and that all too familiar crash. A premium mix of medicinal mushroom extracts and other potent adaptogens, each blend is targeted for a specific purpose depending on what you need. Flow enhances your mental clarity and focus, Zen is your go-to for stress relief and balance, and Mojo offers that clean, natural energy lift. It's the synergy between caffeine and adaptogens that works wonders, allowing us to relish the caffeine buzz without the drawbacks, ensuring a smooth, sustained energy flow. My top pick is the Zen blend. It's a lifesaver for those of us who are caffeine sensitive, and not to mention comes in the most charming packaging. So why not elevate your coffee experience with London Nootropics? Discover the perfect blend, find your flow, and enjoy an exclusive 20% discount with the code SaturnReturns at londonnootropics.com. Hello everyone, and welcome to Saturn Returns with me, Kaggy Dunlop. This is a podcast that aims to bring clarity during transitional times where there can be confusion and doubt. Pausing this for a moment because I've got something exciting to share. Today's episode is brought to you by London Nootropics, the masters of crafting adaptogenic coffee blends that don't just taste heavenly, but they also boost your energy the right way. Now we all love that zesty kick from caffeine. It snaps us awake by outsmarting those sleepy adenosine receptors in our brain. But here's the kicker. Caffeine can hike up our cortisol, giving us the jitters or anxiety, particularly if you're like me and caffeine sensitive. But that's where the magic of adaptogen steps in. These natural heroes level out our cortisol, smoothing the energy boost from caffeine without the downsides. Plus, while caffeine tends to rush in and fade away, leaving you crashing, adaptogens extend that energy, keeping you vibrant without reaching for another cup. So if you want to find your most productive self with Lion's Mane and Rhodiola in their flow blend, Cordyceps in Mojo is known to increase our aerobic capacity, oxygen flow, and boost ATP. So it's perfect before a run or workout or when you're feeling fatigued. So if you're intrigued and you want to dive deeper into their blend secrets and discover which adaptogens sync with you, try visiting their website. And because you're part of the Saturn Returns family, enjoy a special 20% off at London Nootropics adaptogenic coffee with the code SaturnReturns. Enjoy.
I just wasn't embracing and doing enough stuff that served that essence, the who I am. But now I really do feel like I'm doing that.
Today, I am joined by the author and illustrator, Laura Brand. Laura's first book, A Homemade Crafts Guide for Children, came out over lockdown. And as you can imagine, it was an instant hit. Laura therefore decided to focus her second book around crafts for adults and has just released the Joy Journal for Grown-Ups. I was really keen to chat to Laura because a prevailing theme of this Saturn Returns series is maintaining our creativity. Sometimes as we approach our Saturn Return, we can feel like we've lost who we are. Creative exploits are a great way to reconnect with the old you, that child within. And as you'll hear in this chat, Laura definitely experienced this herself. She said crafting and creativity really helped her come back to her authentic self after losing her essence in her 20s. I was really keen to speak to Laura because lots of people that know us both have said that we have a lot of similarities. And so I was really happy to have her on. And also just to talk about this idea of maintaining our creativity and our childlike wonder, you know, embracing the little joys day to day, because as we get into adulthood, we can just sidetrack all those things. And I think they're really important to reclaim. Just to add a bit of context to the conversation, because Laura references her husband a couple of times, and that is fellow podcaster and comedian Russell Brand. Before we get into any of this, though, let's hear from our wonderful astrological guide, Nora.
Nature versus nurture. Venus versus Saturn. In astrology as well as in psychology, the way we were brought up and the permission to claim our natural selves are both intrinsically connected. Venus is our natural joy, desire, creativity, all that we find beautiful, and most importantly, it symbolizes our values. And then Saturn is many things, but to sum it up, it's the outer authority growing up that over time, hopefully, transmutes into our inner authority that we then claim. So going back to Venus, creativity. How do we access it? Interestingly enough, it's through Saturn. Safety. Do we feel safe? Do we feel accepted? Naturally, we might feel a fear in expressing our vulnerability when it comes to all that we value. But do we truly feel like it has a place to land when we are ready to accept our creativity and our joy? A place to be contained. For example, were we allowed to express joy or unrestricted creativity growing up? The restriction would be symbolized by Saturn, outer authority, and then the desire to express that joy or creativity would be symbolized by Venus. So again, let's be honest with ourselves. Were we? Could we? And if yes, in what measure? And if no, in what measure? Let it sink in, whatever the answer might be. And then, contemplate. Are we still feeling restricted today? Do we still feel debilitating fear surrounding any type of expressed joy or creativity? Saturn return and Saturn transits reminds us that yes, we are to be disciplined and we are to be mature and we are to reparent ourselves. But this also means that we have full permission to shape our lives in the way we desire it. That we are to honor our Venus and our Saturn. We are to honor our nature and take the best of what we were nurtured with and leave all that doesn't serve us behind. So sit with it. Give yourself emotional space and then ask your inner child in the right psychological way. Hey, what gives you joy?
Welcome to the Saturn Returns podcast. I'm so excited to have you.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you, Kagi. I love this podcast. I really, really enjoy listening to it. And so when there was the opportunity came up to be on it, I was thrilled.
Oh, that's such an honor. I actually have this weird thing with you where I feel, I have it quite with quite a lot of people that come on the show, but I feel like I know you already.
I feel it too.
So tell me what you have going on at the moment, because you've just had a book come out.
I have, and actually, it's just in front of me here. So the Joy Journal for Grown-Ups is my second book, which is always like, it takes me quite a long time to write a book, it seems. Like, so you sort of write and you have this process of, especially with a crafting book, I really go through it, like go through all the activities and I'm doing it. And my first book, The Joy Journal for Magical Everyday Play, was totally inspired by my motherhood. So becoming a mum and having two children sort of under two and doing stuff with them, looking for ways to bond with them, looking for ways to be creative, but also wanting to sort of tap into the nostalgic play of my own childhood. So looking at more, you know, back to basic stuff, and you're presented with so many options, so many toys, so many games now. And I really wanted a book that felt timeless and that was just like, what can we get from the kitchen cupboard? What can we get from the bathroom and make and do? And that book, and that really leads me on to this book, totally sets that up. That book came out literally almost the date of lockdown starting here, which is weird because I'd been writing it for 2 years, like 1.5 years before. So I'd been doing all this stuff, how to make stuff at home using toilet rolls and things like that. And then suddenly it was coming out at a time where we had no choice but to be at home. So the book, for that reason, or for whatever reason, did well. And I'm still kind of blown away.
It lent itself to that moment in time.
It did lend itself to that moment in time because I had so many messages from people being like, we just wouldn't have known what to do with our kids without having access to the shops or the playground or whatever. And it was that conversation, usually through Instagram more than anything, with parents that inspired me to write the next book. So that is this one here, which is 50 homemade creative and sort of crafty ideas. For almost, it started off with the idea of it being about for well-being. So how can we connect with our creativity for our self-care or whatever we're going to call that? And that includes lovely creative activities like self-care products and mindful activities. So they'll be more like making, mindful making activities. Then I call them activities, by the way, which sounds very childlike, but in a way that is the whole point of it. It's going back to that.
To be playful.
Playful, exactly. And that's how the book is. It's an invitation to grown-ups to play and make and do. And hopefully the idea is that I can sort of also show people a little bit of the ways I'm sort of resourceful with crafting. So how do I look around the home as an adult and go, right, I want to make paper, but I don't have paper making stuff. What am I going to use from the kitchen? So I really talk about that a lot. It's quite anecdotal. So it's got a lot of stories in and it's got a lot of tips and ideas and things like that. So this is this book.
Because you mentioned a second ago about how it's been influenced by your life growing up. So I would love to, you know, go down memory lane and kind of tap into the nostalgia of that. Because I'm trying to think as we're having this conversation, what play was like for me. Because how old are you?
I'm sometimes I get this wrong, by the way, Kaggy. In fact, in an interview last...
You're like, I have no idea in this lifetime.
I mean, honestly, I did an interview with the wonderful Elizabeth Day 2 years ago for a magazine. And she had to follow it up after and she went, Laura, you told me that you were 34, but I must say you're not 34, you're 33. And I was like, oh my gosh, yes, okay. Sorry about that. I'm actually 34 now as we speak.
But I love that.
Yeah, I know. I just get it wrong. Well, it's perfect theme for Saturn Returns. I'm basically stuck at 29. So I don't know what's happened. Very interesting. I can't get over that 29,
We'll get into that because I guess we kind of grew up at a similar time. So, you know, I remember doing things like paper mache and I don't know what kids do today, but it seems it's all very digital.
It is. And even actually recently, my husband and I bought our daughters loads of science kits because they're into science. So they had a sort of STEM science week at school. And then when they came back and they wanted to make erupting volcanoes and do experiments, for whatever. Now, there's like lots of brands that do great science kits, but they are all very, very plastic heavy. Mm-hmm. They're very sort of like, right, what do we need? Well, we need to wear gloves and it's all sort of throw away at the end. And I suppose when we were young, I mean, I don't know about you, but this is one of the things that really, in fact, it's in one of the books, whether it's the first or the second. There used to be, and there still is, a crafting company that used to do perfume making kits and soap making. It was real old school, like old, old, old. It still looks the same. They've not changed their packaging. I found one in a garden centre the other day. And I used to just love doing stuff like mixing and making. And I used to think those perfumes smelt like the best thing on earth. I used to sort of make bracelets. Were you into that? Beaded bracelet making?
And we used to sell them and we used to go to the seaside and get like shells and make sort of crappy things out of them and stuff like that. Because everything you do feels very earthy.
I just spent a lot of time outdoors. So I was always sort of trying to be sort of, I had a pretty vivid imagination. I used to think, you know, like that the outdoor world for me was, you know, I could live
there. Mystical place.
Exactly. Ooh. I really truly believed in fairies. I really like loved sort of the magic of nature, and I thank God haven't lost that. I was a really weird child, and I definitely am still weird now.
In what way?
Like, and it's okay. I was weird. Like, I really was very fascinated with like bird poo and worms, and like really, really into the muckiness of nature. So like I keep weird things in my pockets and then emerge, and it was like all sorts of
creepy crawlies.
Yeah. Like creepy crawlies were very much friends of mine. And, you know, I think that a lot of it was this sort of vivid imagination I did have, which I hope to always have.
I definitely still have a very vivid imagination in growing up. Like my childhood was all about play. We would go into like the woods and the forest and just like you say, have this kind of like mystical experience. And like, it seems to be like a prevailing theme in this season of Saturn Returns and with the guests of like, and something that's stirring for me is the importance of maintaining our creativity. Because I think as we become adults, you know, the pressures of life, financial worries, relationship, friends, job, keeping all these things going and all these plates spinning, it seems that our ability or our interest in play kind of gets diminished. And it's like, well, that's not something that's like the priority right now. we do readily disengage from our imagination in many ways as we get older. And you can see how the way children are, the way they are with play, the way they just like make things up and have can just exist in their imagination.
And they are absolutely present. And one of the things I hope that I've sort of really tried to tap into with this book is that idea of how to be present in the thing that you're doing. Because the mindfulness thing is really, really interesting to me. Like the idea of how to be totally in the moment and present in what you're doing. And my access point, well, one of them is nature. So going into nature, you know, without a phone, preferably, but obviously not always possible, or going into a creative thing that, you know, whether that's, I do a bit of painting, I draw and things like that, but other things, cooking, dancing, all these things are creative and they're exercises and things to get you into the now and the present.
Yeah, because I think it's important to acknowledge that what works for you and I is going to look different to every individual, but I do believe that we all have that thing, and it's a kind of alchemy. It's a thing of self-expression. Yes. It's a way of, like you say, being present, being mindful. And so I would kind of like implore people that are listening to kind of tap into what that might be for them. And one thing that is coming up 100%. For me is something that, you know, I was pursuing as a career, and for like various reasons, I found it too hard. But singing is something for me that makes me very present and very in the moment. Yeah. And it's almost like I'm getting something out of it, like as I'm kind of, I don't know, I'm like connecting to something, and it's like a soul kind of connection.
It's who you are. It's your essence.
Yeah. But what comes with that, like when I tried to make that kind of as a career, it was like almost too vulnerable. Mm. And then the idea of it being kind of criticized. Yeah. And I think that's when we're children, we don't have the same self-awareness. We're not like, they don't need to be validated by anyone apart from perhaps like they learn to be want to be validated by their parents. And then that creates all kind of problems. But they're more like, I'm just going to do this. I'm going to sing. I'm going to dance. I'm just going to be who I am. But as we get older, we're like, I want to be who I am. But if you see who I am, what if you don't like me and then you judge me? And so therefore I'm going to keep it hidden. I'm going to keep it small. And so we kind of detach these like parts of ourselves that are really important to our sort of fullness because we're afraid of like how the outside world is going to perceive them, I think.
100%. My husband and I talk about this a lot. Like when I say I was a weird child, like I was a weird child in the way that I was probably no different to many other children, but really into stuff that I hope is still there within me. But yeah, like you say, all the other layers on top of us prevent us from sort of exploring. But actually, I hope I'm going through a phase now in this sort of part of my life where I'm sort of going back a little bit to being that more.
Reclaiming that.
Reclaiming it. And there's a space that I feel I was putting on a performance of who Laura was. And actually, I learned a lot. I did a lot of different jobs. I was really exploring who I might be. Mm-hmm. And obviously I mentioned to you earlier, I'm sort of stuck at 29, but weirdly I'm not really stuck at 29. I've gone way beyond that and I'm much more back to who I was before. Mm. It's a weird thing. I can't really, it's like this weird, like the 20s for me became a sort of a bit of a blur, great on so many levels. And thank God I've got so many beautiful friends out of that time as well. But also, like, gosh, I think who was that person? Mm. I'm not sure. But that was a slight performance, but also probably what we needed, like the ego maybe playing a bigger part, you know, because of us discovering ourselves.
But that's such a sort of a classic Saturn Returns experience, and I completely resonate. Like my whole 20s, I look back and they were magnificent in many ways and terrible in others. And I was just constantly shape-shifting, you know, I was just like putting on all these different faces because, like you say, I think particularly as women, we are conditioned to fit in, to kind of mold ourselves into certain scenarios. So you say like, you're a weird child, but you probably weren't. That's just like how the world has told you to think about yourself because it's not the sort of norm of what people might be doing today. And I kind of felt the same. Exactly. I felt like I liked solitude. I liked poetry. I was always like a much like deeper thinker than I kind of thought was normal for my age. So I kind of kept those aspects of myself hidden. And then I was like, okay, this isn't like acceptable to be this way. So, but I think by judging these people, this is how I should show up in the world. And therefore I'm going to kind of adopt those characteristics, those mannerisms, perhaps try and pursue that career and just be this version. And yeah. I think eventually that entity sort of thing became like something separate from me. And then I don't know about you, but at 29, yes. I suddenly was like, okay, that's not me, but who the fuck am I?
Yeah, 100%. Like, I was really trying to think before coming to speak to you today, I was like thinking because of this weird confusion I have over my own years that I've been alive. I was like, right, what was I doing at 29? Well, I was actually pregnant with my first daughter at 29. And it's weird because it was actually after her birth that I was like, right. And obviously that's quite an obvious thing. Like a birth of a child, you have to go through your own stripping away mm-hmm. of who you are when you become a mum.
And a massive identity shift.
100%. I mean, right from pregnancy for me, I struggled with a pregnancy where I was sick for 9 months. And so like I really had to look for ways of, and actually that's how I discovered hypnobirthing, and I actually went on a whole journey with that.
What's hypnobirthing?
So hypnobirthing is sort of fear release and breathing techniques supporting women and partners to those women, birth partners, in pregnancy and childbirth. So it would be, for example, I met this wonderful Holly DeCruz was my teacher, and she's an amazing woman, and she first of all started working with me in mindful exercises for my sickness. So then I was like, hold on, what is hypno? I didn't know either. I thought it was like a hypnosis. It's not at all. There are relaxing exercises, but it's much more to do with the idea of dropping into a state of relaxation, which enables you to trust your body more so than your mind. So you're kind of getting rid of adrenaline in the birth process, and you're inviting in oxytocin and all the things you need in order for birth to feel flowing. And most people, even if they have a birth where it doesn't go the way they want it to go or hoped it would go, usually say at some point hypnobirthing helped them with their state of mind at a point during the process. And I practiced that with my husband. We had an amazing experience with it for the birth of our daughter, went on to do it again for our second daughter. And then I trained as a teacher. So I also teach couples hypnobirthing as a part of like just something I enjoy doing. I really do it for passion, not for anything else. So it's more for trying to help people with fear of birth and things like that. So with that, it was like I had to shed all the pre-existing ideas I had about what birth and childbirth was going to be like and what motherhood was going to be like.
Did you have fear around it?
Oh, yeah. Initially, yeah. I thought it was going to be... When I became pregnant, I didn't almost have a fear. It was oblivion. It was like, I've got no concept of what this is going to be like. Probably I don't even know all the parts of the female body by name. You know, like it was literally complete back to basic stuff where it was like when I learned about the anatomy of a female body and what happens during pregnancy and labor, I was learning it for the first time.
Isn't that awful?
In pregnancy.
We just have no, like the fact that we can be in our 30s and be like, I actually don't know how to name my vagina.
I know, exactly, 100%.
And that is, you know, that is a sort of symptom of the patriarchy, is that just at one point it was like, oh, this isn't 100%. Really important. Let's just kind of draw a basic diagram and be done with it.
And so with that, I really had to go back to like basic education. And through that learning process, I was like, wow, my eyes have been opened. I want to go on this a bit further, this journey. And it sort of just changed my whole perception of who I was, I guess, because I relearned about myself in a different way and was supported. So whoever the birth partner was, it's not always the husband, the wife, the girlfriend or boyfriend. It sometimes is another person who they choose, that's the entrusted person. For me, it was my, at the time, boyfriend, but now husband. And he was learning too. And we did it together and it felt very empowering. And I feel that was 29. So for me, it was a real back to basics learning experience there, upon going into this sort of new phase of my life after what we would call Saturn return.
That, because when I think about motherhood and stuff, because I look at a lot of people that have gone through that process and stuff, and to kind of bring it back to what we were just saying about how like the 20s felt very shape-shifting and being whoever you need to be. When I look at motherhood, I have this fear around it that it's going to shift my identity in a way that's like feels, I don't know, to something that's like really conventional, and then that's kind of who I am. Because you know how you see people just, it suddenly change. And that gives me the fear a little bit, because I'm like, oh God, I don't want to just suddenly become only a mother. And no disrespect to people that that is like an important part of their identity. Like, I appreciate that. But then I'm like, okay, how do I sort of negotiate my independence whilst also being a maternal mother, when there's so many conditions that it comes with that come from the outside of like how we change or how we're viewed differently?
Yeah, I mean, it is what you said there. It is about like your own independence. It's really, it is hard. And it's taken me a couple of years. My youngest is 3 and a half. She'll be 4 in June. And it did take me a couple of years of feeling a little bit lost, a bit like, who am I? I mean, like, I don't know what, you know, like, but I now feel actually the opposite of what you fear. So I feel more myself than ever now. And whether that was the experience of birth and what you have to go into, or whether it's simply that I'm supported in a different way, or maybe it's just because I'm allowing myself to be like, my interests are more aligned with the sort of life I'm living. You know, like I was living, for me, probably I just wasn't embracing and doing enough stuff in my sort of world of interest and like, going back to that word essence, that served that essence, the who I am. But now I really do feel like I'm doing that. Like, I really do feel, even if it's play, you know, like, I really enjoy making Play-Doh with my kids. There's something there that's like, great, I love this.
Yeah, because it sounds like motherhood for you was like the gateway to kind of reclaiming your essence, essentially.
It has been, I suppose. It has been. And I know that's not for everyone. And I really do appreciate that that's not for everyone. But I feel probably that I was like lost before. And it's not that necessarily it was even motherhood. I feel like it was a different type of, maybe something happened with my confidence. And then it dips down, you know, because then it's like, there are moments where you go, I'm like just a mum, and what am I ever going to do anything? Why, I don't have the same ability to be spontaneous when my friends were all meeting up and I was the first one in our friendship circle to have a baby. So I felt like I was sort of like missing out on stuff for a couple of years. But I really, really, truly feel that I was offered different types of experiences that probably served me well and better now. So I, it's an interesting thing. And there is a lot of fear around it. You're not, that is, that there, it's a natural feeling to have.
It's not uncommon.
No.
I think there's just a resistance in saying so, because, you know, as women, we're like, oh, you just see these pictures of people glowing and pregnant, being like, I'm so excited for having a baby. And then I think there's this pressure as well to just be like so joyful about it the whole way through.
Oh God.
And not realize that actually what you go through afterwards of kind of establishing yourself again.
To be honest though, I will tell you one thing. I did not glow in pregnancy. I honestly spent 9 months in bed. I was throwing up everywhere. Supermarkets, taxis, side of the road. There are places I almost have like, I'm triggered by because of sickness. Yeah, I had full on sickness.
So the pregnancy experience was not fun.
No, not at all for me personally. And there are moments where I see a picture of myself and I think, gosh, I must have been feeling well that day because I'm sort of with people or whatever. But no, I didn't. I had to stop following. I actually unfollowed loads of Instagram accounts during that time because I couldn't look at people blossoming in pregnancy. It was too much
just
for me,
like
to feel
doing like weights in the gym and running their companies and you're like barfing in the bathroom.
I literally was like, I spent it literally on all fours, like with a towel for the whole time, basically.
And that's the thing, you just don't know how one individual is going to respond to it. It's kind of luck of the draw, isn't it? Or do you think, is that what brought you to the hypno birth stuff?
It was, yeah, because that was when I was like, right, I've got to do something. Like, I'll try anything. What kind of meditation can I do? What kind of mindfulness stuff can I do? It actually gave me a focus, the hypnobirthing. So it was like, you know, I started it during a real peak of sickness. And then towards the end, it was like the focus. The focus was preparing for this event, this birth, whenever it was going to be. I also learned to let go of all ideas of, you know, I was not looking at dates or when it's going to happen, or I just had to fully surrender.
Because how much would you say your sort of mental state, whether it was consciously or subconsciously, was impacting your physicality, if at all?
I'll give you a better example because it was more recent. A year ago when I had this, it was more relating to my back, but it's totally mind and body related. a year ago when I had this terrible like back issue, because I get prolapse discs, which is a really random thing, but not through injury, I just get these sort of back issues, slip discs or whatever you want to call them. And only I know now that I get sort of like a neck spasm when I'm not listening to my body, when I'm stressed, when I'm not resting enough. I think I've now, and I've been managing my back pain well for a year until recently I had a blip where I had a really bad situation, ended up in hospital, but I had let it go. I'd let my self-care around my back go. And when I stopped and I took my eye off the ball, I injured myself in a way that needed a lot of medical attention.
You mentioned this word a second ago, which I think is such a crucial element to it, is like surrendering as well. And because the mind is like, we're controlling everything, we're calling the shots. How hard was it for you to surrender? And like, what does that word mean to you?
A year ago when I had this terrible like back, it linked to like a sciatica, so I couldn't really walk. I had like a pain that was nerve pain, which is very, very difficult to manage. So it makes you get quite depressed. And I ended up spending like 10 days in bed, in my bedroom, like with the door shut, like not allowed to get up. And I literally went cold turkey on my life. Like I had everything came up for me. My husband said it was like watching someone come off drugs. Like the control that obviously I had everything to a certain degree under control. So I have like a routine with the children. I'd had routine with work things. So the minute that I actually was like told, you're headed towards spinal surgery, you better lie down and like rest and decide what you're going to do, I was like sweating, Kagi. I was literally in my room like, oh my God, I can't bear this. I could hear the kids doing stuff. I could hear my husband trying to make packed lunches. And I was like, you know, I wouldn't do it that way. I wouldn't let them do that. You know, and I honestly,
still trying to micromanage.
Do you know what? Actually, the micromanagement was what I was having withdrawal from. Micromanagement. Wow. That is exactly it. And I had like full on like palpitations. I had to call people, like call friends. Like it was like I was in serious cold turkey. Seriously, yeah.
Because the micromanaging thing is like obviously it kind of runs in a similar pattern to perfectionism, that they're very like almost celebrated thing.
100%.
I think also like we're like, oh, I've got everything under control. I can know what's going on. But actually it's an example for you where it tips the other way.
I think that you're absolutely right. It is slightly glorified in a way that's like, although I think people are becoming much more aware of not doing that, because it seems that we've recognized now that that is not healthy for us. I mean, I was obviously living, and I still do it. I'm not like a cured micromanager. It's still one of my defaults. You know, I can't help it. But it's something that I'm much more aware of. And it was in that period of time where I literally had to go through a sort of withdrawal, and it was really interesting. And I think actually that's how I connected with Kirsty Gallagher, because I was even messaging her on Instagram. Maybe that was around the time we became friends. And I was like, I'm just going to tell you about the situation. I am feeling like really bad in myself. I don't know how to deal with this. Have you got any advice? Like I need to, the moon, crystals, anything. Throw anything at me. Exactly.
Me and Kirsty actually had like a conversation about it this morning in a similar sort of way of, because the underlying thing of micromanagement is usually fear, you know, and that is sort of the antithesis of surrendering. Mm-hmm. Because if we surrender to something, we're in a space of trust, trusting the universe, trusting ourselves. Whereas when we're micromanaging, essentially we're like, don't trust what's happening. If I let go, everything will fall apart.
Absolutely.
I feel that we're always going to be challenged in these ways of like actually being forced into surrender. And that can be a horror. Like 100%. It sounds like for you that was like horrendous to actually have to let go. But like such a lesson and so medicinal in a way, because you suddenly realize that actually everything is okay.
Yeah. I mean, everything is okay. And not only that, I actually had to put proper self-care into practice. Like I go and see a therapist, or I go and have my back, you know, I have an amazing chiropractor, sort of, he's more than that. He like does kinesiology and all sorts. It's like, I have to see him regularly. That's like one of my main parts of my discipline, well-being. You know, it is a luxury, but it also prevents me from letting my body go like a domino effect of injury. And, you know, yeah, more time outside, more time like sitting down. I don't ever sit down. It's insane. Like, I don't think my kids ever see me like sitting down. And then when I do, they're like, is mummy okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm just sitting down. And everyone looks at me like, you just never sit down. Because I'm also a massive potterer. I like pottering. I like to keep busy and like do stuff. Yeah, yeah, it's great. But also I realise that it's important for my kids to see me taking time off.
And resting.
Time, downtime.
As you kind of go into motherhood, I think it can be quite easy to make yourself the bottom of the list of priorities.
Yes. Definitely. I think I've listened to quite a few things on like boundaries recently where people are talking about how to keep boundaries. And it's the same thing applies. Like if you're a person who might say yes to everything and be a people pleaser, and then what you're realizing is it's like you're suffering for it.
Oh my God. Like boundaries has been and continues to be one of the biggest lessons, because it's everywhere. It's in the self, it's in our friendships, it's in our relationships, it's in our work. And I think that, you know, you mentioned it when you have those, your body indicates that like it's a bit off, and we all have them.
Yeah.
But then you don't listen, and then things go really, you know, get really out of control. So it's really about like making sure that we have those boundaries in place, which again is like so Saturnian. And that's something that I learned in my own kind of personal way throughout my 20s, of like pushing things and being like, okay, that's where the boundary is. Let's make sure we don't kind of overstep that, because we know what happens when we do.
Oh yeah, exactly. It's something that I've definitely, but I'd say like my definitely 20s was boundaryless with everything.
Totally.
People, jobs, whatever, you know, like it was just like a sort of blur of yeses to everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I used to call things like character building. I'd be doing something so like, people would be like, why are you doing this? You've just worked all week. Why are you now on a Sunday getting up at 4 and selling things in a market? I'm like, I'm just meeting character building.
It was like, no, you just don't have any boundaries.
No, exactly. Because I had jobs that were always very sort of taxing, because I was in hospitality and I used to work very long hours. So I used to sort of do that. And then on top of that, it would be like I'd get a job on top of a job, and people would be sort of like, but then through that, actually, one thing I'll talk about I don't know if it was in this book or if it was in my first one, one of the things I always went back to was doing creative stuff. So I used to do shop windows, which these were my little joys, if you will. Mm-hmm. So I would have like a job where I worked in a nightclub for a little bit. I worked it, you know, for a big hospitality company, and that was quite taxing on the body and on the mind and on general health and well-being. And then I would find these little joys in doing stuff like painting a shop window for a children's shop, you know, or painting things for people, or literally like gifts and artwork, or, you know, like I just love doing stuff like that. And I think that was always my little tap on the shoulder going like, remember you're a person who enjoys doing creative stuff.
It's really important that we all do for ourselves, for as a practice to our self-care, kind of tap into those things that make us feel joyful, content, fulfilled.
Yes.
And like you say, that they're subtle and they don't have to like, I don't know, buy you a house or whatever, but they're really crucial to our like fundamental well-being.
100%. They're grounding, and they make you feel like you're being your authentic self, tapping into your essence.
Tapping into your essence. I love that. Well, Laura, thank you so much for coming
on the
podcast.
Thank you, Jackie. I really enjoyed it.
And people can get your book. It's out now.
So my book's available, you know, on all the usual sites. I have a few favourites, but you can go to my Instagram and the link's in my bio there. My Instagram page is at The Joy Journal. That's where I do everything. So I have some things coming up and events, and you can find it all there on my Instagram page.
I love that. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Kagi.
I loved what Laura said about crafts being a great tool for mindfulness, because they keep you present. And I think more than ever today, we need to find the practices that allow us to do that. So I hope you took something from this conversation. And if you want to find out more about Laura, you can follow her on Instagram at The Joy Journal. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, you are not alone. Goodbye.